All right, so tonight we're going to be in chapter 6, as we talked about, and going to chapter 7, talking about Gideon. Last week we talked about in chapters 4 and 5 about Deborah, the story there with Deborah. And to go over that, the outline of things that we've studied so far, again, the failure to drive out the enemy is how we opened up in the study. We looked at an overview of the period of the judges, and then we started talking about our first judges, Othniel, Ehud, and Shamgar, which takes us through two cycles of the cycle of disobedience there. And then last week we studied about the story of Deborah. And then tonight we'll be looking at Gideon. So as far as just some lessons from last week, the first thing there is we went through, 80 years of peace before we go into the period of Deborah here. So quite a while. Then, of course, as it always begins, Israel does evil in the sight of the Lord, and they're delivered into the hand of King Jabin. King Jabin of Hazor for 20 years. And, of course, he oppressed them, and then Israel cried out to the Lord for deliverance. And that's when the Lord sends Deborah, who is our next judge, our fourth judge, to deliver Israel. Of course, Deborah gets the help of Barak, to help lead the army attack against Sisera with 10,000 men. They go up to Mount Tabor, is where they start that attack up there. And, of course, Sisera comes after them. And we see Sisera gets off his chariot and heads south to find the tent of Jael, who is Heber's wife there. And as we know, Heber was allied with King Jabin at this time, but Jael took that opportunity to dispense of Sisera there at the tent. And then we looked at just briefly the song of Deborah there in chapter 5. We talked about how Israel has had these songs in the past to help remind them of the deliverance by the Lord for Israel. And I thought something was interesting to note before we start tonight to go back to that study. And Christine mentioned this to Trina, and Trina mentioned it to me, so I want to just bring it up because it's something that's pretty cool that's mentioned back in Deuteronomy chapter 32, if you want to look there. I think we mentioned it last week about these songs that were taught to the Israelites to help them to remember those things. But in Deuteronomy chapter 32, look there. This is, again, the song of Moses we talked about last week. But at the end there, notice beginning in verse 44 through verse 47, this is after Moses had taught them that song. Through verse 43, it says, "So Moses came with Joshua, the son of Nun, and spoke all the words of this song in the hearing of the people. Moses finished speaking all these words to all Israel, and he said to them, 'Set your hearts on all the words which I testify among you today, which you shall command your children to be careful to observe, all the words of this law. For it is not a futile thing for you, because it is your life. And by this word you shall prolong your days in the land which you cross over the Jordan to possess.'" So it's a strong warning that's given there, and a reminder to them, make sure you're teaching this to your next generation so they'll remember these things that the Lord has done. And then not only that, but there's the warning that you see in that song. Notice verse 15 and 16 there. It says, "But Jeshurun grew fat and kicked. You grew fat, you grew thick, you were obese. Then he forsook the God who made him and scornfully esteemed the rock of his salvation. They provoked him to jealousy with foreign gods. With abominations they provoked him to anger." So it kind of it's foretelling there what they're going to do. They're going to forsake the Lord and obey these items, bow down to these idols. And it's a reminder there, make sure you remember what's going to happen if you forsake me. And verse 19 through 21, notice what it says. It even says what the Lord's going to do if this happens. It says, and when the Lord saw it, He spurned them because of the provocation of His sons and His daughters. And He said, I will hide My face from them. I will see what their end will be, for they are a perverse generation, children in whom is no faith. They have provoked Me to jealousy by what is not God. They have moved Me to anger by their foolish idols. But I will provoke them to jealousy by those who are not a nation. I will move them to anger by a foolish nation. You know, basically tell them, there's going to be other nations brought in to punish them when this happens. And so, you know, when all these things are happening, when they're being punished by these other nations, you'd think that they look back and remember, oh yeah, we were taught this back at this time. We were taught this song that tells us these are the things that are going to happen to us if we worship these idols of the other nations. But just something I wanted to mention. Appreciate it, Christine. So something to think about there. And as we're going to see tonight, I think there's some evidence that they're being taught something. But we'll get in that here in just a minute. All right, so getting into our lesson tonight, we'll just go ahead and start by beginning with lesson one. And we'll start on this side, whoever wants to begin there. Yeah, and how long did they oppress Israel? 7 years. It's quite a while for taking their means for living, right? Their livestock, their food, their crops. So they were starving to death, really, what was going on here. And it was oppressed, they were oppressing them so badly that they had to live in these dens and caves to stay safe. Let's see. So who were the Midianites? Do we know who those people were or where they came from? Surely someone's got a little footnote there that says where they came from. All right, let's look at Genesis chapter 25, verses 1 and 2. Genesis 25, just so we have a little bit of a background of who these people are. Genesis 25, verse 1 and 2. Abraham, again, took a wife, and her name was Keturin. And she bore him Zimran, Jokshan, Medan, Midian, Ishbak, and Shua. Okay, so Abraham's second wife, Keturah, had these sons, and they are the generation that became the Midianites, who Israel was then in conflict with later on. And in fact, they went to war against the Midianites. If you look at Numbers chapter 31, Numbers 31, under Moses, they went to battle against them. Numbers 31, you can see the story there, verses 1 through 20. They went to battle against them. But Moses gets mad here because what do they fail to do here in their battle against the Midianites? Fail to completely destroy the whole group. Wow, I'm seeing kind of a pattern here now later on. Just continue to fail to follow through with what God had asked them to do. So again, they failed to completely destroy the Midianites as they were asked to do. So it's follow through. They have a lot of trouble with that, it seems like. You know, completely following the Lord and what He has asked them to do. Do we follow through with our responsibilities? I guess that begs the question, okay. You know, they had so much trouble following through with what they were expected to do that God has asked them. You know, kind of, we've got to reflect on ourselves and think to ourselves, are we following through with our responsibilities that God has given us? And there's something to consider there. Or do we let off the gas? You know, we're doing great, doing super, everything's going great. hey, I can just let off the gas now. I don't have to completely, do what I know I need to do, or do the good things that I know I ought to be doing. Let's see. So verses 3 through 5 pretty well clearly talks about the oppression that they had there. How they would come in and they would just destroy everything, take their food. And so they were being oppressed. They were starving. And so then in verse 6, we see there where Israel was greatly impoverished because of the Midianites. And the children of Israel cried out to the Lord. And that leads us to question 2. Obeyed the voice of the Lord. Do we have any additional information on who this prophet was that was sent? It doesn't really state anything. I didn't find anything that stated who this prophet was exactly. But we know that the message there. The prophet tells them, hey, God has done all these great things for you, but you have not upheld your end of the bargain. You have not obeyed him. All right, and then verse 10, if you look there, notice in verse 10, it says, also I said to you, I am the Lord your God. Do not fear the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell, but you have not obeyed my voice. I think it kind of shows there in what the prophet was saying that they had a lack of faith in God. Apparently they were fearing the gods of the people of the land. All right. Any comments or questions up to this point before we move on? All right, question. Let me keep up with my slides here. Question 3. They definitely had to hide it from the Midianites, or else they would have taken it from them, wouldn't they? What's the process of threshing that we see here? The grain. What are they doing there?
Separating it from the stalk.
Yeah. So there's the grain, and there's the outer shell, the chaff, and from what I understand, I think... York had a good explanation of it in the last class of how they would beat it and throw it into the air, and the wind would carry away that outer shell, the chaff, and they'd be left with the grain. So it was normally done outside, but because they were trying to keep it hidden, he was inside the wine press there to try to hide it from the Midianites. Sir?
I have done that.
Yeah.
Taking peas that you carry from one year to the next, the seed peas. You put them in a sack and get you a pretty good sized stick where you'd beat them until the peas were out, and then you'd take and throw them sit them in the wind, and the wind would blow the cob away from the peas.
So similar process, it sounds like. Yeah. Does this remind you of any Bible passages talking about this process here? Reminds me of Matthew chapter 3, verse 12. The chaff represents, the ungodly, useless part of the wheat. Being this Psalm 1? Yeah, that's another one. All right, number 4. Yeah, and he also, there in verse 13, when Gideon answers back, "My Lord, if the Lord is with us, why then has all this happened to us? And where are all His miracles which our fathers told us about, saying, 'Did not the Lord bring us up from Egypt?' But now the Lord has forsaken us and delivered us into the hand of the Midianites." So he seems to be saying there too that, you know, why are we in this situation if you're going to be with me? Why has God forsaken us? That's kind of that's the question that I have. It seems to be that Gideon seems to indicate that he knows about the God Jehovah and the great things that He's done. In verse 13, when he says there, "And where are all the miracles which our fathers have told us about, saying, 'Did not the Lord bring us up from Egypt?'" So he had been taught about the Lord and the great things that God had done for them, but it seems like there's something missing there. Chad? Certainly seems like he knows all about the great things God did and that He's doing for them. But what goes with that? You know, hey, God can do all this great stuff for you, but what's the other side of that too? There's another side to it. What's his
obedience?
Obedience. Yeah. What's the expectations there? There's some requirements. There's that covenant that Israel had with God. You know, are they being taught that there's a covenant there that's expected to be kept with the Lord? Brother Jim.
We have the same thing today. People get to dwell on the mercy and love of God and to leave off the fear of God.
Yeah.
You find that among a lot of religious people today.
Just teaching the good stuff, what they want to hear, and maybe not so much what's expected of us if we're going to be in the right relationship with God.
Yeah. Jesus taught parables, so people would have to dig a little deeper. It seemed like what Chad was saying, they just didn't want to dig any deeper. They liked the stories and how to know.
Yeah, that certainly seems like the case here. Often we hear what we want to hear, right? Maybe not what God's Word really says. Any other comments on that before we move forward? We get complacent, don't we, when things are going good. Tend to not rely on the Lord as much as we should. Maybe that's why He brings trouble our way sometimes, right? To cause us to remember Him. All right. Should be on 5 here. Got it up there. Yeah.
No son convinced Gideon that it was actually the angel of the Lord speaking to him. Well, 18-22... Gideon says, don't leave just yet until I bring you my offer. So the angel of the Lord said, okay, that's fine, I'll be on it. So he fixes the offer and he brings it to Gideon and tells him to put the meat and the unleavened bread on the some rocks and pour out the broth. And then verse 21, the angel of the Lord put out the end of his staff that was in his hand and touched the meat and the unleavened bread, and the fire rose out of the rock, consumed the meat and the unleavened bread. And verse 22, Gideon perceived that he was the angel of the Lord.
What's the first thing that the angel says to Gideon there in verse 14? Go in this mighty yours, and you shall save Israel from the hand of the Midianites. Have I not sent you? And of course, he asked there, so he said, oh my Lord, how can I save Israel? Indeed, my clan is the weakest in Manasseh. And that's what Shelby was saying there. But then the angel reassures him, says, surely I will be with you, and you shall defeat the Midianites as one man. What would that show? Defeating the Midianites as one man. What's that going to emphasize or show? Yeah. And for one man to be doing this, surely there's got to be a God that's behind all this. I think it's interesting, it says, my clan is the weakest in Manasseh. I'm the least in my father's house. Well, that'll just bring more glory to God, won't it? Look how little I am. But the big picture is, God's going to be glorified through all this. That's the point. So then verse 17. He says to him, now if I have found favor in your sight, show me a sign. James talked about that. And then he realizes that he had been talking to the Lord. Why was Gideon so alarmed there in verse 22? Says, alas, O Lord God, for I have seen the angel of the Lord face to face. What was his concern? He's going to die. Yeah, they knew, hey, you see the Lord, you're going to die. But then he's reassured there in 23. The Lord said to him, peace be with you, do not fear, you shall not die. The Lord's going to be with him. He's assuring him that. All right, question number 6.
What did Gideon have to do before carrying out the task he was given? I was a little confused by the question, maybe nobody else was, but the task he was given was a large task, but if it means that the task he was given to tear down the altar of Baal, he built an altar first after all of this happened where he received that it was named the Lord. He built an altar there. And then the task he was given was to
Yeah, it did seem like there was two sacrifices there involved there. The second where he took his father's bull. He tore down the altar that his father had. And who is his father?
Joash.
He was told to tear down that altar and build one in its place. Why did he tear it down at night? It says he tore it down at night.
He was afraid of what his father might do and the people of the city.
Yeah, he was afraid of what might happen if he did it during the day where everybody would see him. So he does this at night. And how do the people react after they find the torn down idol, this other constructed altar? Do what? They want to kill him. Yeah. Was there another comment or something? Yeah, it really kind of shows how far Israel's declined here at this time for wanting to kill somebody for worshiping idols. You know, in the past, you could be killed for worshiping an idol, right? Now they want to kill someone for destroying an idol. It just kind of shows the the moral depravity. The reversing of what?
Distinctions.
When
you make something evil good, and you call something good evil.
Yeah, that's a good example of just how far they have come at this point. Yeah, certainly seems so. Now the interesting thing is how Joash reacts to the men. First of all, how does Joash react to the men that want to kill his son because of this?
He said, "Let Baal answer for himself. If he be of God, let him answer for himself.
Yeah.
Let him take care of that situation.
Yeah. If Baal's so great, let him handle the situation. Let him render justice, to Gideon." Does that seem kind of strange to you that Joash would say something like, I mean, these were his idols? You think he had a whole lot of faith in his idols if he would make a statement like this? Brother Chase? Yeah. You know, based on his father's reaction there, it seemed like maybe there might be an understanding by his father that, man, these idols, they're really not worth anything. And that, I wonder if, and this is just personal thought maybe on this, is that, maybe it was a social thing. Everybody else is doing it. I'm going to be social outcast if I don't have these same idols that everybody else does. So maybe I better get my idols and put them in my house so I look the same as everybody else. And that's just a thought out there. Peer pressure, whatever. John. Well, that's true too. Yeah, good point. Yeah, well, when this situation arises, it could have been like, okay, Mark.
Further on. Backbone to stand up against his own household. He just didn't say nothing.
or comments before we move on? Okay. I think I meant to go to the next question first. Number 7.
How did the obedience of the troops in verse 34 talk about the Spirit of the Lord came upon you and that you were trained?
All right. So in our see it very good up there, but there's the arrow there that show how the Midianites came across the Jordan River there to what's the name of the location there where they positioned themselves? Anybody got that? Verse. Jezreel, Valley of Jezreel. Yeah, so it's kind of where they would have been positioned there. There it is. Okay, you see the top red dot up there? That's where the Midianites would have been. And the Israelites would have been just to the south. And what's the position where the Israelites were camped there or positioned there? All right, so I guess that's more in the chapter 7. It says, then Jerubbaal, that is Gideon, and all the people who were with him rose early and encamped beside the well of Herod. So that would be, that dot would represent beside the well of Herod. And then the camp of the Midianites was on the north side of them by the hill of Moreh in the valley. All right, so that's just kind of a showing of where they would have been positioned there before the battle there. Alright, so in verse 34 it says, the Spirit of the Lord came upon him. He blew a trumpet and sent messengers to Manasseh, Asher, Zebulun, and Naphtali. Just a question, and I don't know the answer to this, but when you look at the map up there and you see, so Manasseh, Asher, Zebulun, and Naphtali. Asher, Zebulun, Manasseh, Naphtali. What? Any idea why Issachar was there? I mean, they're right smack in the middle of all that's going on. I didn't find anything, any reason why they weren't asked to participate, but anybody have any? Maybe they just weren't asked. All right. I couldn't find anything.
All the trouble seems to have been a big turn. So the American standard had the Israelites was gathered together.
Mm-hmm.
That's the name of the head of the family, as I understand. So in other words, where before
shortly. He doesn't want very many, does he? The Lord doesn't want very many participating. All right. Let's see if I can get this thing to move. All right. I can't get it to move more, so we'll continue on. Question number 8.
Second sign, the grounds would have to flee for it. He would have
want a little extra reassurance. In verse 34, it says the Spirit of the Lord came upon Gideon. Okay, so the Lord was with Gideon then. Why did he need this extra assurance then? He had just gotten the Spirit of the Lord was just put on him. Wouldn't that mean that he had everything he needed to go into battle? I don't know. I don't know that, you know, it doesn't seem as though because he had the Spirit of the Lord that was giving him any more faith. I mean, maybe he needed a little more reassurance. He had certainly had strength. I'm sure that the Spirit of the Lord gave him strength just like it gave the other judges. But I don't necessarily know that it gave him, the reassurance and faith that he wanted through the fleece story there. Any thoughts on that?
Even the strongest of us have our doubts.
Yeah.
Isn't this a sign that God has directed him? If you go back to the third chapter, the 10th verse, the Spirit of the Lord came upon him, and he did it.
Agree with that. Yeah. Do you think this shows that God, that Gideon's kind of testing God? Maybe he just needed a little more reassurance. He's human. I guess, the self-reflection we can have here is how is our faith? Look at all the issues Israel faced because their faith wasn't what it should be. How's our faith today? What can we do to build our faith in the Lord? How do we increase our faith so we don't fall into these, the same traps that Israel's falling? I'm not saying that this situation right here is what we're talking about, but it just seems like, the faith not driving out the people and everything that we've seen up to this point demonstrating a faith issue with the people. How do we increase our faith so that we can avoid these issues that we see with Israel?
Study.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a critical part to building our faith, is studying God's Word. Absolutely. Any other thoughts? I think that's definitely key there. All right, let's go to question 9. Yes, sir. Let's go ahead and answer the last question, then we'll discuss.
think we're in the back. Anybody else in the back there for question 10? All right, back up to the front here, Brother Jim. 10, yes, sir.
Why did God want to reduce the size of these entirements? If they were many, they'd think it's a battle of one for
Yeah, the point of this whole thing is that the glory needs to go to God. He wants them to see that it's Him that's behind all of this, not them and of themselves. Right? Do we sometimes want to take credit for our own successes? Is it easy to do that? Kind of forget about where that came from? It can be very easy to do. Why do we want to take the credit sometimes? What's the reason? What would be? Pride? Yeah. Attention? Right? We can tout it to other people, right? Hey, look what I did. Makes us feel good about ourselves. Look at me. Look how great I am. Anything else? Chad? Can't help but know God's behind that. Yeah. Any other thoughts?